What's up, everybody? David Pollack here of See Ball, Get Ball podcast. I hope you like it, man. Be sure to follow the show wherever you subscribe, YouTube, or any of your other platforms.
Welcome on in. Thank you for joining us. July 14th, SEC Media Day is underway. College football season just creeping closer and closer. I think everybody getting excited. David Pollack here. Brent Rollins joins me as always. We had some teams take the stage. We already gave you the previews of those, minus Vanderbilt. So it was kind of cool to get ahead of that a little bit, just what to look for. But we got a few teams that we're going to preview today. And we'll preview Vandy. We'll preview Tennessee. We'll preview Alabama. We'll preview Georgia. We'll preview Texas. Did I miss anything that we're going to preview?
No. We got to give away some winners here later towards the middle of the show, some College Football 26 winners.
And we told anybody that wrote in something creative, like we give away a couple copies of the game. So we got some really good responses that we'll read that you guys will think is good. And that's the fun part, I think, that we want to continue to grow with y'all, is like y'all giving comments and questions and feedback and things that we can talk about, things that we can do, because we're always here to listen.
It was an interesting day. I didn't get to I saw more of the morning stuff. I was driving all afternoon, unfortunately, but Greg Sankey talked. I think it was like 30 minutes or so that he gave kind of a speech and did some NIL talk and did some things about the Big Ten. And, you know, we'll continue talking, that kind of stuff. And then Brian Kelly talked. And I saw someone asked him, and he said that 1-0 was a specific goal and present on all the weight room stuff. What did you think? What did you think of that? Because to me, that's one of those things where it kind of goes without saying, but
it's been such a big deal. They haven't gone.
It's been such a big deal with them.
Yeah, they haven't gone 1-0 in his era. So I mean, something's, you know, it's interesting. It's kind of like free throws in basketball. Like, do you talk about it or do you not talk about it? And sometimes you worry about if you talk about it too much. Like, does it get in your head and does it play in here? And but you can tell, obviously, there should be no surprise that LSU's got to get ready for their opener. Like, this is, you know, last year obviously was a good one. They've had good ones. They've had good games. They played – they could have easily played Austin Peay and got a win. You know what I'm saying? Like, they've been challenging themselves in the openers, and they deserve credit for that. But it's also the reason they've been losing. And I think, you know, Clemson's another one that's going to be big. And, yeah, you got to think about that. You got to be focused on that, dialed in on that. But it's going to be a heck of a showdown. And if they're going to accomplish something this season and they're going to bring it all together, you know, week one is going to tell us a lot, because Clemson's got the identity, I think. Like, we know exactly what Clemson is. There's not a lot that needs to mesh. And so LSU has a lot. But I thought he was good, Brent. I thought he was very comfortable. I thought he answered questions well. I'm not going to lie. I'm not like a big SEC media guy. I'm not a Big 12 media guy. I'm not a Big 10 media guy. I love football. I don't love talking season and agenda season as much. Like, so it's not my thing, but I do like to listen a little bit. Why are you laughing?
Says the guy who's talking on a podcast about college football.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, agenda season. Like, there's usually an agenda behind things that I don't necessarily, right. You know. And listen, the coaches have to do this. Like, they're obligated to do this. This grows the sport. This is a part of it. You know, seeing Pavia, like, makes you smile. Like, no matter where you stand. And, like, it's cool to see some of the players and to see them get some of the questions, because we don't always get time with the players. And I think that's unique. We get time with the coaches a lot, and we get to hear them. And I'll be honest, I almost fell asleep during one of them today. I'm not going to mention the name because that would be very rude. But I was just like, oh, my gosh, like, bro, give me something here. Like, I'm about to fall asleep.
I'm sure folks could guess. I did want to, like, Hugh Freeze. I did want to see how, like, that went, given the fact that a lot of feedback and a lot of talk from our conversation with him last week. And I saw that plastered all along the internet in a lot of different ways, which the biggest thing that was interesting to read, because I work for Rivals now, On3. And I get to see all the message boards and comments and things like that. People were very like, this is a different side of Hugh Freeze. It was good to see how comfortable he looked and just sort of talking ball and some of the specific things that he said. So that was cool to see.
And you kind of get the opposite of that at SEC Media Days. It's a whole room. You get people from different media backgrounds that, listen, there are people in the business. I don't have to tell you who they are. A lot of times you'll know who they are. They want to say things to start things. They want to say things to get themselves to go viral. Like, that's a part of it. And I think that 99.9% of the coaches can't stand it. They don't like it. And so that's a part of it that they get, you know, upset, that they just don't want to give you a reason to talk about their squad or talk about them negatively. But, you know, there are certain guys that love that and live for that. And it's just, it's frustrating. But, you know, let's talk about some teams, though. Who do you want to talk about first?
Well, okay, first, though, you said guys who love that and try to get that. There's someone who doesn't, we know for a fact, doesn't do that. But he made a comment today that got blown up to about a coach who's not even coaching anymore. And that was Greg McElroy had, you know, talked about sort of a person in the know that Nick Saban might return to coaching. So what was your thoughts there? Because, you know, Greg's not saying that just to create a
– No. That's not Greg. Greg wouldn't do that. I found it interesting. Like, I think Nick has been very forward about, like, I think Nick would love to coach and would still be coaching if it wasn't for this era and how much, you know, uncertainty there was and how much, you know, how much the rules are not really clearly defined and they don't know what they're doing a lot of times. And there's not a lot of systems in place that help him to be Nick. So I'm not surprised that I think there'd be something left in there, but I mean, everybody's got to hang it up at some point. And he's not a young guy anymore. He's still very good and on top of it, but I don't know. It's an interesting comment. Obviously Greg knows him from being with him and his friends with him. So you definitely take it and you say that there could be validity to it. If Greg said it, I'm inclined to believe it.
Okay. All right. Let's get to some teams. And by the way, this is the order of how they're talking tomorrow at Media Day. So this isn't us being Georgia homers in a way. But, you know, they just happen to be first up tomorrow, at least in the order of the.
Man, you ain't got to answer to people like that. Just say it. Georgia's first. They're up. Just talk about the team, man. Don't be doing all that crap. Don't nobody care about that stuff.
So obviously last year, 11-3, they won the SEC. They are the defending SEC champion and they're – current quarterback this year came into that game in the second half, and then they lost to Notre Dame in the college football playoff. So first and foremost, it is just that we've talked about him a little bit, but Gunnar Stockton that's a big question number one. It is, what is he? We've seen basically a game and a half and a few other snaps. What is he going to be? What do you think he is? Can he lead this team to sort of back to where they were a season ago, which is in the SEC championship game?
Here's what I'm going to say. Gunnar Stockton cannot lead this team back to where they were a year ago if it's the same team. If they can't run the football, it's not going to happen. Like, they've brought in a bunch of receivers. That's the worst rushing season Georgia's had in 20 years. Like, 20 seasons. If Gunnar Stockton is a guy that can play action pass and use that part of his game, and they do what Georgia's done with Stetson Bennett and Carson Beck and all these guys, he absolutely can be successful. If you're going to drop back and throw the ball 30-40 times a game, Brent, and not have a run game, I don't think they're going to be back where they were. Like, this is a team that's breaking in a bunch of new components. The interior of that offensive line, guard, center, guard, they all got drafted. Like, they're all gone. So that's going to be a big part of it. So that's my take on that. I think Gunner's a really good player. I think he's got a really, really good arm. I would love to see him continue to grow and get better at the intermediate. I'd love to see him learn how to change pace with the football, Brent. Like, he's got a big windup, and when it's a big windup, it's coming, right? Like, it's coming out. And yep. I'd like to see some of these things that I've only saw a small sample size, but I'm 100% sure if you're not going to give him a running game, it's going to be a tough season for the Georgia offense.
And when you think back to last season, one of the things that I think both of us have said this offseason is the likelihood that Georgia gets might not there. There's a strong likelihood, and basically it is, they're not as talented at quarterback, but can they get better quarterback play? Because there was a time when Carson Beck was in a whole other world and the decision-making was in a whole negative way world, in spite of all the positives that he brought. So I think the running game was the sort of second piece to that. But
it's not, because it's the first piece. Because without it, there is no great offense. Like, Carson Beck Carson Beck put this team on his back at times last year when he needed to. The defense bailed him out some as well, but I don't think that's a formula that Georgia can live and die by. That's why I think Kirby did one of his best jobs a year ago. Like that team, it was weird week to week and finding an identity, and even defensively, you know, was not as consistent as you've seen. But man, were they good in close games, and when they really needed to come through with making plays, like. They found a way to do it. You don't usually do that year after year. You know, those things usually will regress to the means, right, and come back down to earth. But I thought he did a great job. And so that's the ancillary part. And then go to the defense, Brent. Like, I mean.
That was question number two.
Three first-rounders.
Because gone. And when you look at just sheer numbers in terms of yards, points per game, just traditional statistics with their defense, it was the worst of the Kirby era. And the biggest thing for me is looking through, and this is something I've been doing over the past week or so, is looking back through first down for them. And let me just read you some of these numbers here real quick. When you look at first down, quarterbacks 28 of 34 for four or in the three losses for them. So Notre Dame, Alabama, and then Ole Miss, 28 of 34 for like 488 yards and a touchdown on first down. The amount of success they gave up on first down is just, to me, was unlike anything you've seen from the Georgia defense. And that's where, to me, it's the interior, specifically the interior of the defensive line, but the defensive line in general. Can they win on first and second down, especially when teams try to throw on them? Because that's not something they did really at all outside of the two Texas games.
Yeah, and then because then you get in the world of, like, you know, if I stay in base – and I can't rush the passer, well, then if I'm playing against that team, first down passing becomes critical, right? Like, now listen, there's a lot of guys that can sub in now on third down and pass rush situations. And last year, Georgia was subbing a ton of guys. Like, they were bringing in a new hockey team, like, to rush the passer. Okay, so I take advantage of that on first down. But you're right, three first-rounders that were gone. Linebacker core, though, going to be elite. I mean, C.J. Allen is a stud. Like, he can run, he can diagnose, he's smart. Bolden last year showed that you can't say this out loud. Like, you're not supposed to say these things. He's another Malachi Starks. He is. He's a plug and play as a freshman that I feel like in 2 years, after he starts for another 2 years, is going to go be a first round pick. Like, elite covering. And the thing I like the most about him is that is not a big dude, Brent. But he ain't scared to stick his face in the fan and come downhill and stripe you. Give me all those guys, man. Like, I love having those guys, and he is definitely one of those people that I think can be elite of elite. And we're talking about being a first-round pick. I'm going to give you a freshman, Elijah Griffin. I talked about him on here a couple weeks ago. Like, meeting him, talking to him, felt like a child shaking his hand, like – enormous 6'5", you know, 300-plus pound kid that's a 18-year-old freshman that continues to hit over 20 miles an hour every week on the GPS. Like, continues to hit over 20 miles an hour. So,
okay,
like, get you some of that, brother. That's not real fun to have chasing you. And I think he's a guy that can come in and play a bunch of snaps and be really good. Not, he's not going to go kill it. Jalen Carter type good. Like, Jalen Carter, when you saw him as a freshman, like, he was not refined. He wasn't Jalen Carter as a junior. But that dude is a guy that you could play and you go, I'm not going to have a big drop off. And when he learns to use these puppies and his hands and it all starts to work, you better watch the freak out. And I think that's an Elijah Griffin role. There's obviously, you know, other guys on this defense. The secondary is pretty solid. The linebacking core is pretty solid. The D-line, Christian Miller, those guys will come along. A lot of talent, but a lot of inexperience and more question marks, Brent, than I think we're used to seeing. That's the weird thing probably at looking at Georgia more than anything.
Yeah, more unknowns. So given to that, speaking of that inexperience part, to me, there is one game that is, if I had to circle one game that impacts their season more so than any, it's the third game at Tennessee, because that's Gunner's first road start. Obviously, you know, hey, he's starting the SEC, or he played in the SEC championship game, played in the playoff, so shouldn't be as, you know, sort of, you know, starstruck in a way. But first start on the road, afternoon game at Tennessee, you drop that, your season, the outlook of your season changes drastically, I think. Even though they've kind of owned Tennessee recently.
Well, and they have had a lot of success at Tennessee, but that crowd is ridiculous. I mean, it's one of the best in the country, one of the best atmospheres. Like, it's insane. So it will be difficult, and you will have to grow up with certain pieces. Out of all the things, Brent, I'm worried about with this team and with this offense and with Gunner, it's not his mentality. It's not going on the road. It's not like that dude. If you meet Gunner Stockton, and I'm just telling you, I spent some time with the kid, like, just extremely, he is a flatliner. He's like a yes, sir, no, sir, aw, shucks, like, gee whiz. Like, he's just a country boy that drives like a 1980-something Chevrolet Blazer. Like, he's just very quiet, very unassuming. But what I love is what the guys talk about when he jumps in the huddle. It's like, listen, get your blanket and stuff in here and get ready. Like, and I like that. Like, he's mild-mannered. He's very calm, but he's uber-competitive. And so I trust his mindset on that. That doesn't mean he's going to be elite. I'm just saying, like, I think he's the type that can go and do other atmospheres and be okay. But again, do you run the football? And does Georgia get back to being a little bit tougher? Because last year, I thought they lacked a little toughness, which is not a thing that you like to say about somebody.
Yeah, no, I think that's why you've heard Kirby say the fire, passion, and energy phrase ad nauseum throughout the offseason. All right, projection. What they were 10-2 a season ago. Do you think it's same, better, worse?
I think it's – here's the problem. First of all, here's the good news. The good news is you play Alabama and Texas at home. Like, that is the best two teams on your schedule. You got them at home. Brett, they're going to get one of those. Like, they're going to get one of those teams. I think they'll lose to one. I think the home streak will go away. Like, I think that, because it's at the highest in the nation right now. It's over 30, right? Like, it's mm-hmm. it's pretty high. It's been pretty good. Here's where I see a potential problem. You got Georgia, or you got Tennessee at Auburn. Like, both of those teams, really good atmospheres. I don't think you get out of there with both of those. I think one of those are going to be really, really tough to get. I just think with this squad, with the newness, and then you still got to play Ole Miss at home. You still got to play at the cocktail party. Still got to play Georgia Tech at the end of the season.
Tech.
I think it's 9-3. Like, I think they take a little bit of a step back. I think there's too many unknowns to say I'm going to guarantee 10-2, but I've done it for years, and we've always said we're not worried. But I don't know, like, the lack of run game from last year worried me, and you're bringing in guys now that aren't as good. And so I worry about the offense and defensive lines, which is weird and just strange to say for Georgia football.
All right, so we've mentioned Tennessee a couple times. So yeah. Let's get to the Vols. 10-3 a year ago, they lost in the college football playoff at Ohio State. And needless to say, do you think the first question that Heupel gets at Media Days tomorrow will be about his quarterback situation?
Yeah. I think that's pretty safe.
High likelihood.
And I don't know. He's going to get asked about Nico too. Like, he's going to get asked about life after Nico and how it was and how it's been. And I think all that stuff, 3 straight top 20 finishes for Tennessee. It's the first time that's happened in a long time. Like, Heupel's done a really good job with this squad, man. And here's the most impressive thing. He's going to get asked about offense, and he's going to get asked about Nico, and he's going to get asked about Aguilar. But the biggest thing about Tennessee and last year getting in the playoffs was their defense. Like, by far, bar none. And I don't think the defense is going anywhere, Brent. Like, I don't think it's going to be as deep and have as much variety. But I think there's plenty of guys up front that I watched just wave in and out last year and get reps that I'm just like, yep, he's good, he's good, he's good. I think their defensive line is still going to be really good. Their defense is going to be good. I worry about McCoy and the torn ACL in January, because that dude, you talk about playmaker, and you know that dude was on an island a lot and made play after play after play. Like, he was the one guy in the secondary you trust. Now, he tore his ACL in January. That's a long time away. Like, spring ball, you see people come back. And so to think he's going to have a full 6 months, 7 months, 8 months, maybe it goes into the season a little bit. Like, I think we'll see him this season, which will be big for them. But I think their defense is rock solid, and we can ask about their offense and their quarterback spot. So we can talk about that now, but I was more impressed than anything last year with Tennessee's defense. And I think it's going to take a little step back, but I still think it's going to keep them in almost every single game they play.
Yeah. So big question number two for me was McCoy's health. Is he ready to go come season time? Cause he's the second highest graded returning power four cornerback in PFF grades. So let's do talk about the quarterback situation though. Do you think it's, and I've mentioned this before, do you think it's addition by subtraction?
Okay. So let's break this down and talk about this, because let's go Nico. Size, arm, has shown you the ability to make a bunch of different throws. Athletic ability. Those things are all better than Aguilar. Like, will you give me that? Like, those things are all upside, experience, all better in the system. Now, Aguilar, here's what I like about him. He can make the deep ball throws. He can make those big plays. He'll make those home run shots. I feel like Nico's missed a lot of those. I feel like Josh Heupel's system, that's what they do. They make you defend space, and when you hit those balls, you can make big plays and hit home runs. And I think if he can do that and make those plays, he's going to take the intermediate game. He's going to take a step back. The running game, he's going to take a step back. Dylan Sampson ain't there. The SEC Offensive Player of the Year. Four linemen gone. Here's what I'll say about the linemen. They're replacing a bunch of guys up front. Four of the five. I'm not that worried. I didn't think they were that great. Like, that's when you that's the thing about returning starters that I always think is like an asterisk. Like, okay, yeah, we're replacing returning starters and you don't have experience, but he wasn't that good. Like, he was the guy we had, but he wasn't, you know, he wasn't a guy that I'm like, crap, like, oh, really missing that guy. And I would say offensive line-wise, they weren't great. But if they can't protect him and they can't run the football, one thing I've seen with Aguilar is he'll turn it over, Brent. Like, he'll make mistakes. And under pressure, he's not great. Now, that system, again, alleviates some of that pressure. And if he can hit those deep balls, you know, Tennessee can still be very good and maybe – take a step forward offensively as opposed to what they were last year. But I think there's a lot of things that have to go right with losing four or five linemen, SEC running back, offensive player of the year, top three wide receivers. Like, there's a lot going in the other direction for that offense.
25 turnover worthy plays a season ago for Aguilar and a 32.6 passing grade under pressure. So to me, I put as a key player to watch is true freshman David Sanders Jr., who was, you know, one of the highest recruited, if not the highest recruited offensive lineman, that
he'll start day one. He'll start day one. Plug and play
for them. So, like, he's one for me that, all right, anytime you start a freshman at tackle in the SEC, it usually doesn't end well. Can he play? But the other question you brought up is one that I wrote down because it's a I know you're not a baseball guy, but you do watch movies. So, do you ever watch the movie Moneyball?
Of course.
Brad Pitt about the – okay.
Of course.
So, do you remember the point? We can't replace Giambi, but we can replace him in the aggregate. We can get the, you know, the yards and the carries and things like that. So, you're not going to replace the singular Dylan Sampson, how good he was. But maybe with the system and then the players that they have with Bishop and Lewis and then the transfer from Duke, Star Thomas, you replace him in the aggregate to get your offense where you need to be. So
maybe
can they do it? We'll see.
Well, but I think who steps up at wide receiver, you know, I wrote down these names, Matthews, Staley, yep. Smith or Jackson, the freshman, and then Amari Jefferson, the Alabama transfer. Like, cause another thing too, you're replacing Squirrel White, you're replacing McCoy. Like, they weren't great last year either. Like, they dropped a lot of balls and, you know, especially missed those home run balls. I think that, you know, this offense, again, can it be big play, Brent? Because I think their D will keep them in games. So, you know, that's what's – if I'm a Tennessee fan, I'm pretty excited about.
Joshua Josephs, do you think he takes a big-time leap here?
I do. I think he's going to get more PT, and I think he'll get more playing time, less – they'll probably less revolving door, right? But he's a guy that – I mean, you see the flashes. You see flashes of greatness. I mean, he's got some – he's got some goods. What about the schedule, too? Because I think the schedule is a big part of of them playing early in the season.
Syracuse in the opener.
Huh?
Syracuse in the opener
in
Atlanta.
Which is tough. I mean, Syracuse is not a Division I AA team that you know you're going to steamroll. They'll be ready to give you a fight, which is good. East Tennessee State, you know, obviously that's what it is. But then you go UGA, then you go UAB. So, by the way, all of those games at home. And then you go at Missouri, then you play Arkansas. Like, that's not a world beater schedule. Like, the thing I wrote down
at Mississippi State, by the way, it's at Mississippi State.
Yes, at Mississippi State is a road game, at Florida, which will be difficult, at Kentucky. Like, if you're going to tell me the most manageable schedule in the SEC, it's Tennessee football. It's Tennessee football. Like, I like when I'm playing my toughest games or most of my toughest games when they're at home. I think this is a good schedule for them. This is an 8 or 9 win team for me, because I think they're going to be close to what they were, but not defensively. And then offensively, there's so much that I don't know about. So with the easiest schedule, man, like, I'm going 9. I'm going 9 wins for Tennessee. Mm-hmm. What about you?
I wrote 8-4. Okay. Feels like 8-4, 7-5, depending upon what you get from the QB. So we'll see. You've each have taken a step back, by the way. Both Georgia, Tennessee, you took a game back, which I think to be expected. All right, so now it's time to look at some winners and semi make fun of ourselves a little bit. So I'll let you, since you're in with the game, you can tell them what's going to happen here.
Well, we said that, like, whoever could get creative in the comments, which we're getting some today, like Frank Walsh, I like it, buddy. Brian Kelly and his family. We heard that last year, which was fun to make fun of. Could you make fun of who had the wittiest comment, the best comment in the chat? And there were a lot of good ones. And whoever won, we're going to send you a copy of the NCAA the football game. So, you know, we got two winners. And set this one up, Brent, because they need to know the backdrop.
All right. So Coach Freeze was talking about how he worked with a psychologist.
Yes, psychologist.
And about how he handles quarterbacks. And then he was like, sometimes I need to be Michael Jordan and just, you know, get on the guys. Sometimes I need to be Scottie Pippen and kind of be passive and in the background. And then our buddy Sean, who's an avid listener, and we thank you for that, Sean, said, sometimes you need to be a Rodman.
I don't know what that means, but I love it. Like, I'm not sure, because there's so many ways you could go. Because if you watched what was the documentary, was it called, with Jordan?
Last Dance.
The Last Dance. If you watched it, it was just awesome. Like, it was such a good documentary. But, like, MJ had to learn to, like, let Rodman be Rodman and go to Vegas. And just, I think you also, as a coach, you got to learn to, like, let things go and have fun and relax. And sometimes those guys, man, and those personalities do a really good job. So that's one of them. And the other one we can pull up too.
I don't know if it's the other one, I don't know if compliment or maybe a little bit of a dig, but we'll take it either way. So Hog Wild Fishing on YouTube. Feel like I'm currently being lectured about football by the cast of Smallville if you bought them on Temu. I mean, I see, I'm going to look at it on the bright side. I think he's complimenting our show, because Smallville is about, like, Superman, right? So, you know, we got Superman on the show. Also, it was there for, you know, like a decade. So it was a long running show. It wasn't like it was just a flash in the pan kind of thing. And then if you bought them on Temu, like, that's a discount online business. I'd never partaken, but anyway, you're the cheapest person on the planet, I think. I'm right there. I'm probably not far behind you. And maybe he's making fun of us. I don't know. Who knows? But if it didn't win, contest is rigged. Well, the contest is not rigged.
Hey, I got to get one more
chicken dinner.
I got to get one more in there. Davey Pie, just catching up with the dog's preview. Crazy how people overlook them based on the QB. Didn't they do the same with Stetson? I hear you, Davey Pie. The Stetson rosters were one of the best rosters in the history of college football. Like, the supporting cast and the defense and the guys around them were all timers, all drafted, all in the NFL. So listen, as a Georgia fan, I know, and here's the good thing. The good thing is everybody's hearing this, and Georgia's hearing this, and Kirby's hearing this.
Yes.
And for the first time for a while, they're going to have plenty of fodder and plenty of people telling them that they can't do X, Y, and Z. But you still got two natties in the last four seasons. Like, you're doing all right. Like, you're doing pretty good. All right, where are we going next, homie?
Well, first, so the contest winners, you'll figure out a way to get in touch with them, and you got codes for download.
Yep, we'll get you a brand new copy of the College Football 26.
And we'll do that in the future here soon. So don't you got to stick around and keep watching, keep subscribing, which, by the way, number two.
Numero dos.
On the old Apple podcast rankings the other day. Actually, I saw it today, too.
Crazy.
So, all right. I think the heading is Texas versus the field for this. And we have talked a lot about the Texas Longhorns. And obviously, numero uno question is just how good is Arch. But I'm going to – we'll talk about that in a little bit. Offensive line. I think that's – you got four or five guys gone, and you have, very talented and very highly recruited. Brandon Baker, big-time recruit. Goosby that was played some last year. Like, you got highly recruited big-time guys that are stepping in, but can they be what they were a season ago on the offensive line?
They're not going to be where they were a season ago on the offensive line. I think it's – you don't replace all that experience. I just don't think you do it. Definitely not day one. And they got to go Ohio State day one, which is a tough ask for all the new pieces that are coming in. When you look at this squad and you look at the way they've recruited, they've done a great job. Like, that, all the Texas talk about success and the we're back and all that stuff. Like, they've been to two Final Fours in a row. Like, this is a program that has absolutely done that and taken off. And they're here to stay. And now they're in a new league, and we're going, is it Texas versus the field? So that kind of gives you an idea. Now, it's not because of their offensive line. That's not why. But here's why I feel better about their offensive line. A, play caller. Sark's the best in the business. Like, you're not going past three for me in the business of with Steve, without mentioning Sark for play calling. Like, knows how to run screens, quick game, QB run game. Arch Manning going to have a chance to really escalate that area. That's going to be a big part of protecting the offensive line. His ability to run the football. Why would I not use it? Like, so I think that, do I think Arch is a proven commodity that I'm ready to throw my hat in the ring and go, bro, Heisman ceremony? No, like, I'm not there yet. I know some people are. And if you say the name, I should be there. Like, what else does he have to prove? Like, if you're a Manning, you're pretty great at the quarterback spot. Like, there's some pretty good history there. Like, I'm not worried about him on a whiteboard. He's probably been on a whiteboard and probably been calling audibles at the line of scrimmage since he was two. I mean, he's just probably been doing that his whole life, and he knows how to do it. The only thing that just kind of stays in my small little brain is, like, Texas was so close, such an elite defense a year ago, and Quinn Ewers was there. And so I just feel a little bit in my head, man. Like, if he was that much better, or he was that great, am I crazy, Brent? I just think he would have played. Like, I think you pull the trigger and go try to win a national championship, because their defense held Ohio State to 21 points. Like, 21 is really good.
So I actually wrote this down as a sort of quote. If he can't beat out a seventh round pick, then why wasn't he playing? I think this is Sark playing the long game. This is him looking at it as, hey, I've had a guy in yours who's here and been here for a long time. We're going to just let this guy play, and it's going to be his team. The other kid's turn will be next year and potentially the year after that, because of the way that the family works with oftentimes staying in college more so than you think. I just think he looked at it as much like high school. By the way, much like our local high school. Had a younger kid who I think maybe could have the dynamics of the team. The ceiling may have been higher, but you played the older kid, and it was his team because he'd done that and he'd won so many games and been in so many battles for you. I think he just looked at that and said, day one, it's yours team. I'm playing the long game here. I'm not worried about anything else beyond it being his team and the dynamics of that. I think that's what he did.
Yeah. Well,
counter that.
Here's what I'll say. When we saw Arch, we saw some great. Like, we saw some deep. Yep, listen,
that's the thing.
The competition was not great. But we did see some, you know, long scrambles that definitely did not remind you of Peyton or Eli. Definitely more Archie. You know, you saw some deep shots and some deep balls. So, like, you just know this offense is going to find a way to work it out and be good. Like, I have very little doubt about that. I think Wingo's going to be great. I think Moore is going to be a playmaker. Baxter comes in to join Wisner at the running back spot. I think it's going to give you a little bit more juice, explosiveness. They've got the toughness. But more importantly, it's just on the other side of the ball, man. Like, just give me all the defense.
Every
dude.
Level.
Like, it's just – it's next level. It's great players at every level. Like – yep. If you want to go to me and you want to go, hey, who's the best pass rusher in the country? There's a list of a couple of guys. Colin Simmons is on it. If you want to go best linebacker in the country, there's a list of guys. Anthony Hill's on it. By the way, both of those guys are probably number one on my list. Like, so that kind of gives you an idea. You go to the secondary and the safety positions, dude, same thing. Like, it's the same. It's got to be fun for Pete Kwiatkowski to have this stuff. Like, the way he runs his system, what Texas has, the experience, the pass rush. Do you worry about defensive tackle a little bit, man? A little bit, a tiny bit. But this defense is going to eat. They're going to be elite.
So I agree with all that. And I have two follow-up questions, not necessarily specifically about the defense, but about them and their season upcoming. Because the game you mentioned first, the Ohio State game. Do you think there is any – and I'm going to go back to sort of our youth football days, because we may have had a scrimmage early in the season against a team that you wanted to beat really badly. And the directive was to the OC, hey, we better have all our offense ready to go because we're beating this team. Sark might be playing Ohio State much later in the season. Do you think there's an element of, let me just sort of play this game close to the vest and – not necessarily pull out all the stops to win the game unless it's late and I got a chance kind of thing?
That question annoys me. Like, what the heck are we doing? Like, if that's the case, what are you doing? Late, if you're playing the late in the season game, like, you can make – here's the fun thing about Sark, not the fun thing for a defensive guy. His tweaks off of tweaks are absolutely just annoying as piss. Like – he's going to run this motion, this orbit motion in the red zone, and then next time he's going to run it and he's going to fake it and come back. And you're just like, really, bro? Like, I studied tape. I put myself on the field. I'm ready to make that play, and you do that crap? So, no, you don't hold back, bro. You go for it. And here's another thing, too. Like, the committee can't – they can, but I don't want to hear that, like, when Ohio – if Texas is 10-2, whatever it is – if they have three losses and they lost to Ohio State out of conference, get out of here, bro. They're in. Like, don't give me that crap late in the season. Oh, they have three losses. They have two. Like, SMU last year, or Clemson, excuse me, last year. Like, no. I mean, you know, that kind of a debate when we're debating between what they're at, Texas, because they played that out of conference, I don't want to hear that later in the season.
Okay. And then the other question was, given how the two games against Georgia went, how much time do you think Sark spent looking at that game? Because they'll give me some numbers on Georgia against Georgia on first down.
Oof.
Texas only had 64 yards rushing on 22 attempts. 21 of those were a scramble. They gave up 6 sacks and 6 tackles for loss just on first down in the two games.
So you gave me the bad Georgia first down defense, but like the good first down defense is pretty dang good. So
against Texas, that was it. That was it. By the way, the rest of the season was not so great.
No.
But I do you think Sark looked at some of what he did or tweaked some of – I think, some of the scheme things that they did with Ewers because he wasn't a running threat will change, and how they do things because Manning is a running threat. And I think it's going to make their offense maybe even that much more dynamic.
Yeah. I think the word to me is – here's what I'll say about Arch. This offense, 100%, I have no doubt, will be harder to defend. Because of his wheels and because he's willing to take those deep shots, and I think he's going to connect on them, and you got Wingo and you got Moore and you got speed. And listen, I think they got a stud out of the portal too with Jack Andres. Jack Andres is how you say it. Yeah. I think they got a stud with him, because I think they replaced Helm with another guy that's a big, strong target that is gonna make those contested catches over the middle, who was one of the favorite guys last year that can really make some things happen. So I think this offense will find itself. It might not find it early in the season, but look at the schedule. At Ohio State, tough. And then UTEP, San Jose, yeah, get out of here. And then at Florida. At Florida, you know, kind of early in the season. OU, you know, which is always hard, obviously, Cotton Bowl. At UGA is going to be difficult. But then they host A&M, which is another tough game. But they play Kentucky. They play Mississippi State. They play Vanderbilt. They play Arkansas. Like, we talked about this a year ago, so I'm not going to beat it in the head again. Like, they got a good schedule. Like, they got a break when they got the schedule. Like, this is not exceptionally difficult. Now, at a conference, they went and made it a lot harder. So, kudos to them. But the SEC schedule is pretty dang good for them.
All right, so where do you think they end up? Regular season record? Or over under 1.5 losses in SEC play?
I'll take the under. I'll take the under. I'm thinking that they're gonna be okay. The A&M at the end of the season obviously could be tough. At UGA is gonna be extremely difficult, but I think they got a lot of pissed off. And they went out and got a field goal kicker because of that too. Like, they really struggled in the kicking game. I'll take the under. I'm a believer in Texas, man. I think they're really, really good. I think that defense is going to be an absolute pain in the butt to everybody.
All right, now one team they don't play, that would be the Tide, Alabama, coming off the 9-3 regular season in Kalen DeBoer's first season replacing Nick Saban. Obviously, it starts at the quarterback position with them too, because Milroe is gone, amongst others that were drafted early from their squad. Ty Simpson, how you feeling? Do you think this is more now like a going to be like more like a Washington type offense?
Oh yeah,
that you saw with Penix.
Oh yeah,
and that crew.
Yeah, couple things. I'm just going to throw a couple names at you. When you think Ty Simpson. First of all, he was the number two recruited guy in that class. You know who the number one guy was?
Was that Arch?
Cade Klubnik. So
okay, he's 4 years.
He's worked out pretty well. This guy has sat for 3 years. Like, here's why I'm not worried about Ty Simpson, man. This reminds me of Carson Beck. This reminds me of, even more closely, Alabama fans, listen up, Matt Jones. Matt Jones sat. Mac Jones sat. He watched. He had elite skill around him. He came in, he knew the answers to the test already. Knew how to check the football down. Knew how to get rid of his hands. Knew the system. Now, Grubb coming over, the system's going to be very similar. I think this system's going to look totally different. I think Alabama's offense is going to get way more explosive. They got to find a run game. Last year at the running back spot, they really struggled with that. But I think the passing game will be more on time, in rhythm, ball out. Ryan Williams, you're going to be like, that's a bad mother. Shut your mouth. Like, he is that kind of good. And I think he'll get more easy access throws, and it won't be, you know, have to be as dynamic. But, man, I think the Tide with their offensive line, I think with the receiving core, I think Ty Simpson steps in, and Brent, I don't have any concerns. There's a reason he was one of the most highly recruited kids in the country, and I just don't think that sitting made him worse. I think sitting makes you better, because you get to see it, you get to understand how to watch it, how to grow it, and then when you're ready, I think you're a lot more seasoned and ready for the call.
I think one of the things that he could potentially do for them, and by the way, he's got like 51 attempts in his career, is potentially get rid of some of the inconsistencies in their offense that you had with Jalen Milroe at quarterback. And if they can be more consistent offensively, I think you're going to see what you're talking about, taking the step, because of the receiving core, can the running game, all that stuff. But again, it's the inconsistencies, because you think about their season last year, a couple bad losses that cost them the opportunity to play for a championship. So the other big question for me is the other side of the ball. And I know LT Overton's going to get after the passer. After that,
who else?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. You know, there's names, but in terms of answers, definitive answers, I don't know the answer.
I've seen a lot of people putting Alabama's defense like number one in the SEC and like number one in the country. And that, I'm not going to lie, that kind of surprises me because that's the first thing that comes to mind is the twitch. Like, who are the guys that are – and listen, there was a day that I think you could be very upfront and be gap sound and do all – I just don't think that exists anymore. Like, I think those days are gone. Like, I just think you need game wreckers and you need guys that can get tackles for a losses, get tackles for a loss and change the sticks and give yourself more opportunities. And that's what I worry about with Alabama's defense. Who's getting after the quarterback? Who's making those TFLs? I think they're going to be really good and really solid. And I think they got really good players at every level. Really good players. Really good. But can you rush the passer? Can you affect the quarterback? If you can't, life becomes hard, man. Now I have to blitz. Now I have to play different coverages. Can I play man? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's just so many things that come into the equation. So that's what I wrote down, you know, the same thing for me with them. At FSU, Louisiana Monroe, host Wisconsin, and then at UGA, man. Here's the thing with their schedule. At UGA, at Auburn, at South Carolina.
At Missouri.
Huh?
At Missouri, too.
Yeah, at Missouri. Okay. You're higher on that one than I am. I'm talking about, like, I think that's three of their hardest games that are all on the road. Like, LSU's at home, which is great. But I just think that if I'm looking at that, like, they're going to lose at least one of those games. And here's the thing that I really want to see. Four losses, by the way. Last time Alabama team had four losses was when Saban's first year at Alabama.
Yeah.
Like, so it's been a hot minute. Like, how do they handle that and come back this year? And are they a little bit pissed off? And do they play with a little bit more of an edge? Like, last year, a lot of people went to the portal. It was a tough spot to be in. This will tell us a lot about Kalen DeBoer in his second year.
Very much so. And to give some sort of context to the pass rush stuff we were talking about, last year, by the way, they were one of the least teams in the SEC in terms of getting after the quarterback and pressures and sacks and things like that. Jihad Campbell and Q Robinson, those were second, two, and three for them in terms of pressures and sacks. They're in the league now.
Yep.
Like, after that, it's, you know, Keenan on the inside.
Who's a good player, a really good player, but
great player, not a pass rusher. So, like, at least not consistently. So, yeah, that's just sort of giving to me. Key player for them is Rusaw, or however you say his name. I'm sure I'm butchering it. But number four, I do know that.
Numero cuatro.
All right, so. Over under 2.5 losses in SEC play.
Yeah, you get this
season
one.
Prediction type thing. I think I'm going to go under. I think there's going to be a log jam at 6-2 in terms of conference play. And you're just going to, because last year, I know at one point in the season, we were talking about if this team beat this team, we were going to have like 5-6-2 teams. Like the A&M maybe at the end of the season of all those scenarios. I think you're going to see that this season where you've just got a ton of 6-2 teams in the league. And I think Alabama's 6-2, which to me puts them at 10-2 in the regular season. I think they win their non-conference games.
Yeah, I think they're going to have – I'm with you on that. I think it's going to be a good season. All right, last but not least, the team that beat Alabama a year ago.
Swag City. Pavia Mania.
It's – all right, let me ask you this. Speaking of Pavia Mania, whatever we say, is there a more fun quarterback in the country to watch? Think about that. Is the most entertaining quarterback to watch in Nashville, like playing for the Vanderbilt Commodores right now, like that's going to give you the wow, going to give you the swag, going to run people over, might throw it behind his back, for gosh sakes. Like, he's just awesome. Like, is there a more – does it exist in college football anywhere else?
So, especially if you throw in the you don't know what will happen from a train wreck part of it, yes. But I think, you know, Lenora Sellers might have an argument to say, okay, I'm Superman and can put on the cape and make throws and do things running that a lot of other people just can't. So that might be, but when you add in the element, like you're talking about, of just the unknown, I think you might be right.
It's fantastic. It's fun to watch. By the way, like it's just, listen, it's different. It's Vanderbilt. They have to win with a certain formula. They have to win the time of possession. They have to be great on special teams. They can't turn the football over. Like, their offensive line was okay, but they still they do a little enough of the option, enough of the RPO. And here's the thing that I remember about Vanderbilt. Like, first of all, they've got an elite tight end. Elite. And his story is cool, but he's going to be drafted really, really high next year. But Stowers is his name. Played QB at A&M. Like, transfer. He goes to New Mexico State with Pavia. He gets beat out at quarterback by Pavia and goes to tight end. Like, how cool is that, by the way? Like, and then comes to Vanderbilt with Pavia because Pavia's Pavia, and he's like, that's my guy. I'm coming. He's going to be drafted. He's going to be a first-round type pick, second-round type pick in the NFL. So they've got a nice weapon that they put at the quarterback spot for Wildcat and split him out wide, and he's really, really good. But the two New Mexico boys, it goes through them, Mexico State boys, and it's fun. It's bleed the clock down. It's not do too much, but they take deep shots. And that's the one thing about this offense. They run the ball. They run the ball. They lull you to sleep. Quarterback run. They pull it, and they go bombs away, grenades. Like, and that's the way they play. They possess the ball, and they were 4-4, Brent, last year in games that were decided by seven, a score or less. Like, that's pretty good. They won seven games the first time since James Franklin's been there. Like, Pavia's got magic, and he's fun. Now, their defense, I got nothing. Like, I say it all the time to try to, like, be really nice and
group.
Not say bad things about people. Like, they're very ungood. Like, they're very ungood. Like, they don't do anything great. Like, bottom 30 for the last, like, 6 or 7 years. Not a lot of impact guys. Like, to me, they got to be all in, like, super aggressive, give up big plays, but make big plays. You know, like, it's gotta complement their offense, but it's about that dude. It's about Pavia, who's a star, who's fun to watch. And I think Vanderbilt, they're not gonna be a great team. They were great last year to go 7-6, but they're gonna be one of the most fun teams to watch because you have no freaking clue what they're gonna do.
So two-parter. So do you think then that last season was sort of a peak or just the beginning of a continual stepping stone forward?
That's a peak, bro. That's a peak.
I'm just checking.
Listen.
Because the other thing to me with this is their offense, unique.
Yes. Awesome.
You saw it for the first time last year, all these teams on their schedule. Now it's the exact same teams on their schedule because guess what the SEC has this year? Zero coaching changes and zero schedule changes, which is I was trying to look it up to see if it ever happened, and I'm very far back before that's happened other than home and away. That's the only difference. So I think you're going to see some of that where they're going to have to make bigger plays in the passing game.
Well, you saw that last year though, because down the stretch they struggled. They started off really well and offensively, and they're just not a team that can win like on both sides of the ball. Like, they have to control the clock. They have to just not give up big plays. I think what they can do, Brent, is they can still do the tempo game. And here's another thing, too. We can talk about their offense and the uniqueness of the option and the fun things and the cool things. One thing's still going to hold true for this offense. You still got to get Pavi on the ground, which is a hard thing to do. Best in the country at the quarterback spot at breaking tackles, at yards after contact. He's big. He's strong. He'll pump fake. He'll do weird things. He'll make it hard. He'll get a first down, and guess what they're going to do? That play clock's going to go tick, 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 all the way down. They know who they are. They know what they are. And it's just a team that's kind of a pain. You know, like, they're going to be an irritant. They're going to be in a bunch of ball games, but it's just going to be hard to consistently win seven games. They won nine the previous four seasons. Like, I think this is a 5-win team, 4-win team, but a team that also was a pain in some people's hineys and hang around in a lot of games.
I think they're at least get to a bowl game.
Well, they can get to a bowl game with five wins nowadays. You can still get there.
Yeah, 6 wins. They're getting there with six the right way. The big question though for this team this year: does Pavia go 4-0 against Hugh Freeze? Because
no.
He beat him at New Mexico State. Well, he's with New Mexico State and beat Auburn, Liberty, and then
you're a
Auburn
hater.
Season ago,
you're a hater.
I'm just asking.
You're a Hugh Freeze hater. You just had that man on.
Not.
You
I'm
looked him in the eye, and now you're just hating.
He's awesome.
Nah, he's fantastic. All right, so what are we going to do? What are we going to do?
By the way, I don't think he does either. I think Auburn gets them this year.
I do too. So Thursday, let's shut this thing down because people are like, y'all are gone 50 minutes. Y'all need to shut your mouths. Like, stick with us. But Thursday, we're going to go Thursday night after everything's wrapped up with the SEC Media Days. Kind of recap it. Like, talk about all the things that happened. And if you got comments and you want to keep throwing things on there, we'll keep debating. We'll keep giving you credit for them because I think those are really, really fun. But y'all enjoy the rest of your week. Enjoy SEC Media Days. And we'll catch you back right here as we inch closer and closer, baby, to some college football.